Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, March 25th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, House Republicans' budget plan cuts taxes and spending, and wild rice, sulfate, and politics. Republicans in the Minnesota House say despite the state's projected $1.9 billion surplus, they want to cut spending in several areas of the budget, including health and welfare programs. They're also proposing $2 billion in unspecified tax cuts as part of a two-year budget plan. Tim Pugmire has the story.
House Republicans unveiled a two-year spending target of nearly $40 billion, although that number doesn't include the $2 billion tax cut they want or the transportation funding plan they released this week. They also want to put $100 million in the state's rainy day fund and leave $319 million unspent. House Speaker Kurt Dowd of Crown said during a news conference that Republicans are trying to reduce government spending.
The bottom line is this: government spending cannot grow faster than family budgets. We set our budget target with that value in mind, and at the same time, we're going to show Minnesota that we can prioritize education, we can prioritize roads and bridges, and we can prioritize protecting our aging Minnesotans' way of life.
Dowd said some of the proposed tax cuts would go to businesses and some to individuals, but he offered few specifics. He said the House Tax Committee will make those decisions in the coming weeks.
Sending checks back is not something that we're really considering. We'll likely want to target tax relief to help out Minnesota families.
House budget committees will begin making decisions based on the new outline. Environment, jobs and economic development, and state government finance will face cuts, and there's no plan for a bonding bill this session. Other areas will see reductions in projected spending growth. House Ways and Means Committee Chair Jim Knobloch of St. Cloud said the plan's proposed spending on health and human services is $1.1 billion below projections. Knobloch suggested changes are possible for the state-subsidized health care program MinnesotaCare. He also highlighted the need to better enforce the eligibility of people receiving other state-funded health care.
And we're going to have a major initiative that saves hundreds of millions of dollars for the state by concentrating on medical assistance and simply getting people off medical assistance that aren't eligible for it because they make too much money.
House Democrats were quick to criticize the plan. DFL Minority Leader Paul Thiessen of Minneapolis accused Republicans of catering to corporate special interests with tax cuts at the expense of vulnerable Minnesotans.
We can't even come close to $1 billion in cracking down on eligibility medical assistance. Do we need to always continue to look at that and make sure that that's correct? Absolutely. But we're never going to come to make $1 billion in cuts to health and human services without hurting people.
Thiessen warned that the Republican budget proposal is a recipe for another state government shutdown. DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach of Cook offered a similar warning.
I just will say, if their intent is to dismantle MinnesotaCare, in 2005 we went to a government shutdown to save it, the Senate did, when Governor Plenty was in office and the Republicans controlled the House. They were looking at some significant changes to MinnesotaCare in 2005, and the Democrats in the Senate decided it was worth a shutdown. We don't plan to dismantle MinnesotaCare this year either.
Bach said the Senate will release its budget outline on Friday. The House plan is about $3 billion smaller than DFL Governor Mark Dayton's budget proposal, which he released in January and revised last week. Dayton is proposing more spending than Republicans in nearly every budget area, but only $197 million in tax cuts. A spokesman said the governor is reviewing the GOP plan. Tim Pugmire, Minnesota Public Radio News at the Capitol.
Minnesota's legislative auditor says the State Department of Human Services continues to have difficulty managing eligibility requirements for several public assistance programs. Mark Zedeklik reports.
According to the annual audit, DHS needs to do a better job screening public assistance applicants. David Policino of the Legislative Auditor's Office says the department needs to better train the network of county workers who determine eligibility for medical assistance and other programs.
For instance, the temporary assistance for needy families, the TANF program, the department found an error rate of 57%.
In response to the audit, DHS officials said they've worked hard to improve systems, and they noted while there is still a significant amount of work ahead, the annual audit found fewer problems than last year. Mark Zdechlik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
The state agency charged with keeping Minnesota's water clean says new science shows the need to move away from a law that's been on the books for more than 40 years. At issue is a limit on sulfate, the water quality standard designed to protect wild rice. Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
Sulfate is a compound that's naturally occurring, but it's also released by iron mining operations and wastewater treatment plants. Wild rice has long been a part of Minnesota's heritage. It's especially important to Native Americans. So in 1973, the state developed a rule that limits the amount of sulfate in waters where wild rice grows. The limit is 10 milligrams per liter, which translates to roughly 7 gallons in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. Now, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency wants to change that.
The 10 wasn't wrong, it was just imprecise.
That's Assistant Commissioner Rebecca Flood.
We have much more information now about the things ecologically that happen out in the environment that influence the presence of wild rice or the absence of wild rice.
The science shows sulfate itself doesn't kill wild rice. But when it mixes with the bacteria found in the muck at the bottom of lakes and rivers, it's converted into something that is toxic to wild rice, sulfide. And recent research has shown approximately what levels of sulfide in a lake or river can still allow wild rice to grow. But MPCA officials say predicting the sulfide level just isn't as simple as looking at how much sulfate is in the water. Wild rice appears to grow just fine in some waters that have high sulfate concentrations. They say iron is a factor. So is organic carbon. Shannon Lotthammer directs the Environmental Analysis and Outcomes Division at the MPCA. She says the agency is proposing a formula to predict whether wild rice will be able to thrive in a given lake or river.
The available data that we have just don't show a general pattern of iron and organic carbon in water bodies in Minnesota. And that's why that science led us to this proposed approach of an equation.
Proposed sulfate values have only been calculated for a handful of lakes. It varied from less than 1 milligram per liter to 140 milligrams per liter. John Pastor is a University of Minnesota Duluth professor who did the current research on the relationship between wild rice and sulfate for the MPCA. He agrees his work showed sulfate concentrations could have different effects on wild rice from lake to lake, and that the agency is right to scrutinize the level of sulfide, the toxic stuff. But he says the MPCA's proposed formula isn't even close to being the solution.
They need to validate that against experimental data and against data from lakes that they didn't get data from to make the equation in the first place. That equation is just, at this point, just a hypothesis. The onus is on them to demonstrate that it could work. They have not done that here.
The MPCA is seeking input from researchers and others as it moves forward. And once officials come up with a formal rule, which is expected in late summer, that will go through a 2-year administrative process that allows for plenty of public input before it becomes final. U.S. Steel, which owns 2 taconite plants on Minnesota's Iron Range that are affected by the sulfate standard, has praised state officials for reviewing it. But some environmental groups are asking, what happens in the meantime? Attorney Paula Maccabee represents the group Water Legacy, which has pressured the MPCA to enforce the existing standard. She says just because the state is proposing something new doesn't mean the existing sulfate standard can be ignored.
The law is clear. We have a 10 milligram per liter wild rice sulfate standard. And what's going to happen in rulemaking, hard to predict. But what shouldn't be hard to predict is that what happens now is enforcing our existing rule.
MPCA officials say they've briefed federal officials on their proposal, but can't say yet whether the existing standard will be enforced in the meantime. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
This new approach to setting wild rice standards comes after years of lobbying by taconite mining companies, Iron Range legislators, and environmental groups.
The political push and pull over the issue shows no signs of abating, and the MPCA remains caught in the middle. Tom Scheck has that story.
The Pollution Control Agency says it's basing its new standards on science, but politicians have also played a part in the process. For example, MPCA officials accelerated their announcement after Governor Dayton told NPR News on Monday that the current standard is outdated and would be catastrophic for mining in northeastern Minnesota.
I'm standing up for what, you know, again, I think is best for Minnesota, and to have a standard that's antiquated, that's not even based on current science, directly related to the conditions that we're trying to deal with, to me doesn't make any sense.
Dayton has been actively involved in the discussions about regulating pollution from the taconite plants. Over the past several months, he's spoken with U.S. Steel executives, Senators Amy Klobuchar and Al Franken, Congressman Rick Nolan, the EPA, and the Iron Range Legislative Delegation about it. But MPCA Assistant Commissioner Rebecca Flood said her agency's scientists didn't develop the standards as a result of pressure from Dayton or anyone else.
This is something that we've been working on for years now to try to conduct the research and evaluate and develop the appropriate a proposal moving forward that we then enter into the rulemaking process. So this is a part of our normal way of operating and developing water quality standards.
But the MPCA was getting it from all sides. State lawmakers worried about mining and wastewater treatment plants were pushing legislation that would undermine the current sulfate standard. DFL Representative Jason Metza of Virginia is one of those lawmakers. He called the MPCA's announcement a step in the right direction.
On a statewide level, this has a broad impact, and it's time to just find a solution that's reasonable for everyone and let science draw the conclusion that solution is based on.
Metza says he and other lawmakers will remain skeptical of the MPCA as it develops the new rulemaking. DFL Senate Majority Leader Tom Bach says he'll continue to pursue legislation that prevents the Pollution Control Agency from enforcing the current standard. That would help U.S. Steel as it works through a new environmental permit for its Minntac plant in Mountain Iron. MPCA was set to enforce the existing wild rice standard that U.S. Steel executives said would cost hundreds of millions to meet. In fact, the state has never widely enforced the current standard. While Bach is no fan of the MPCA, he blames environmental groups for attempting to enforce the standard now. He said their push to more closely regulate the taconite operations is an indirect attempt to block future copper-nickel mining in the state.
They're looking for a boogeyman in the closet somewhere that can stop the state from developing another mining industry in addition to iron ore. And I think for a long time they thought they had found it in the 10 standard. I think the crux of it is they just don't want any additional mining in Minnesota.
Environmental groups say the issue has less to do with new mining and more to do with enforcing the clean water laws already on the books. Catherine Hoffman, with the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy, says she's worried that moving from a uniform standard for every body of water in the state to a formula for individual bodies of water could be ripe for political pressure.
UCA probably needs to recognize that those variables, companies will push on those variables and try to argue that they should be different than what PCA thinks. And so you've introduced a lot of uncertainty that is vulnerable to politics.
MPCA officials say they'll work with the Federal Environmental Protection Agency to develop the new standards, but the EPA is also hearing from those who worry the Dayton administration is weakening water quality standards. DFL Congresswoman Betty McCollum wrote a letter to EPA Administrator Gina McCarthy earlier this month, warning her to not support any efforts to weaken water quality standards in Minnesota. A spokesman for McCollum said she's reviewing the proposal and would have serious concerns about any proposal that would put Minnesota wild rice at risk. Tom Scheck, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.